I'll talk about. Can you hear me? Searchable symmetric encryption, and this is joint work with Reza Gudmola, Seni Kamara, and Rafael Ostrovsky. And I guess I should first clarify the title a little bit. Here we're not going to be designing an encryption, symmetric encryption scheme that allows for searching. More, we're going to be designing a scheme to allow for searches over symmetrically encrypted data. Okay, so you can think of a meta searchable symmetric encryption scheme. And what's the motivation for this? Well, the main motivation is that of remote storage, which is needed and all over the place, for example, for data backups or the companies that have to store, archive all the data. And so they would do storage outsourcing. Okay, and perhaps they don't have the reasons, they might not have the expertise. They're required to do that, but they might not have the expertise or resources to do it, but they have to do it. And more closer to the user, you know, we have examples like, you know, email system servers, well, some remote server is storing all your private personal email. Okay. And then the question is, how do we store sensitive data? Well, we don't trust the server completely. Okay, so one easy answer would be, well, why do we just encrypt the data? Okay, which is supposed to hide all the information about the data. But now, if we want the data back, we want to search for something, we want to do something with the data, we have to download, just upload here, download all the data, okay, decrypt it, and then do the searches ourselves. Okay, so is there a way to enable the server to help? And if we did that, you know, ideally we could have, you know, we could strike this balance between, you know, functionality, search functionality and privacy, and let, for instance, this feature of, you know, Google Desktop, which basically says, you probably know about Google Desktop, where you could do searches on your own computer. But now if you have multiple computers and you want to do searches over the multiple computers, so the service says, well, why don't you upload all your data and we'll do a search for you? Okay? But let's not get carried away too much. We're not going to be doing this type of Google type search, but more very, you know, more basic functionalities. Okay, so that's the motivation. What we're going to be doing is, first, a brief overview of different models for private searching. Our focus, as the title says, is going to be on searchable symmetric encryption, where I'm going to be revisiting some of the most recent definitions, propose new definitions and new models, operations, in particular something we call non-adaptive and adaptive SSE. And then I'm going to be talking about at least one construction to do SSE. And finally, I'll conclude with some extensions. Okay, so we're talking about private searching. We're talking about two parties trying to do some sort of, you know, two-party computation. And in principle, one could use tools of so-called, you know, secure multi-party computation, okay, which would allow you to do this type of thing and more, but would be inefficient. Okay, so what have people been doing for this particular function for search? So we can classify the settings basically into three categories. First, I would call it the public data setting, where the data are unencrypted. And examples of these are, you know, stock quotes and news articles or patents. And now the client wants to do some search over that data, but doesn't want to know what item the client is accessing. Okay, and basically this is being captured by something called private information retrieval and its variants. As opposed to public data, we can think about the user-owned data, in which case typically would be symmetric key encrypted, where here the client is going to, you know, do it and upload that data and some additional data structures that would help with the search. And things that have been done here are started with something called oblivious RAMs, which are RAMs that are oblivious. Basically, this is work by Ostrowski, Goldreich. And I'm going to mention that a little bit later. So we'll use RAMs, and this is the focus of our talk, basically. And then to finish this, we could think of another setting called the third-party data, where some other, you know, parties are encrypting data for the user. Okay, and this typically will be public key encrypted. And, you know, we come from other users. An example of this would be email. Okay, this encrypted for the recipient. And here there's something called PEX for public key encrypted keyword search. That started with the work by Bonnet, DeCrescenzov, Strofsky, and Persiano, and there are some other follow-ups. Okay, and what we'll be talking about, focusing is on the user-owned data, which we call searchable symmetric encryption. Okay, so the scenario in more detail. So we can think of the client having a collection of documents, okay, system words. This could be also like a database, big database, and the documents would be records in the database, for example. So he would encrypt the document collection together with some additional data structure and send everything to the server. Okay? And the basic functionality that we want to support is that now the user is going to be performing a very basic type of search. You know, get me all the documents that contain this keyword. Okay? And we, all this additional data structure stuff, we would allow the server to do the search for us. Okay, and we are going to be doing that, trying to reveal as, you know, little information as possible. Okay, so what are the prior work on SSE? I mentioned oblivious RAMs. How many of you are familiar with this construct? Okay, so this is a very general, I think it was was devised in the context of software protection. Again, the idea is to store everything in a remote and trusted server and allow the server to do very basic computation for the client, okay? And the server will have to maintain some data structure, and this allows the server, everything is symmetrically encrypted, this will allow the server to read and write on this remote computer without the server knowing what it's doing, okay? So whenever he would touch something, he would touch something at random. Whenever he would not do this something, he still might do something at random, you know, in this data structure. Okay, and there are reads and writes. So this allows this thing to be a very powerful tool, do all kinds of things, you know, powerful things, embed data structures and so forth. Okay, and this oblivious RAMs hides everything pretty much. You know, the thing that, you know, the server knows is that the data, the user data is so big, and that the user is active. You know, he's doing things, bringing things, writing things, but doesn't have a clue of what about what the user is doing. Okay, this is very nice. Except that this requires a logarithmic in n, where n is, say, the total size of the data, numbers of interaction for each operation between the user and the client, the user and the server. Okay. And it has some storage blowout that is poly logarithmic, and the work of the server is poly logarithmic, and it has to touch everything and so forth. Okay, so this was back in the 90s. So, and I guess people, perhaps even without knowing about this you know, previous work, started saying, well, why don't we, let's do it more efficient. You know, we cannot afford, you know, logarithmic number of rounds, so let's try to do constant number of rounds, single, you know, just one round. Okay, and let's try to do it, you know, with the privacy that oblivious RAMs offers us. It turns out that that's a great open problem. So we don't know how to do that. So how about if we try to do that relaxing the security requirements? Okay, so this previous thing, gave us absolute privacy. So this starts with the lack of security definition and allow the server to leak something. Okay, so people start saying, well, let the server know that we're doing something called the access pattern, but nothing else. And this is what the recent work has been doing. It turns out that defining this a little bit, formally is delicate. And in fact, there have been more approaches than these, but these three main approaches. This first introduced by Song, Wagner, and Perig, secure indexes that we're going to be using by Go, and more recently work by Chang and Mitzenmacher. Okay, so that was the prior work. So let's start talking about this relaxation of security definitions. So basically, as I already mentioned, well, let's see, let's let this scheme, SSE scheme, leak the outcome of a search. Okay, what would be the search outcome? So the server is storing, data, files, and so forth. So we could let the server know that we are accessing, the memory addresses, the identifiers of those documents or records that, contain the keyword that we were looking for. Okay, and in principle, there's a hidden keyword here. So some of the examples we like to, hide the what we're looking for, the keyword that we're looking for. Okay, so and also notice that if you different queries might have the same outcome, right? So if a document contains two words, then search for that word is going to get the same document back. So we find it convenient for this more delicate formulation of this definition is to also talk about the search pattern. Okay, because as you're going to see, by doing this search, the server actually knows more. For instance, it's going to be knowing that, for instance, we look for the same thing twice. Okay, so we could define more or less search pattern and everything that we can deduce from whether, the client looked for perform two queries, same queries or not, or two queries for the same keyword or not. Okay, so perhaps a better intuition would be, okay, we're going to let the server know the outcome and also this pattern of the search. Okay, so let's see how the definitions evolved through this prior work. So this, in some sense, the first modern construction is due to these guys. And they have a very basic construction, which I'm not going to go into detail here, but basically they assume that you would know the order of the word, the locations where the words are stored in the document or the database record, and then use some sort of string cipher to encrypt those words, superimpose that structure, encrypt the document with a structure. And then, the first approach would be just reveal the keyword, perform the string cipher on that particular keyword and see if the thing matches on that structure. Okay? And then they show by doing a two-layer encryption thing, show to also be able to hide the keyword itself. Okay? And as we mentioned, the adversary, when does the search, he gets to know what the user is searching for. And I guess their definition was basically a definition of security without taking into account that the server is searching. Okay, so the definition of security is something like, well, if you have this encrypted data, encrypted file, it's semantically secure. Okay? And it turns out that it's not, so more specifically, this definition would say that whatever you can compute about the plain text should be able to compute the ciphertext just by knowing the length of what is encrypted. And it turns out that by doing the search, the server knows more, like the location of words on the file can play some statistical attacks on the encrypted file and so forth. Okay, so this was basically a secure encryption scheme type definition of SSE. which is what these guys. No, no, their definition says if you basically at a high level, if the server doesn't search, then the thing is secure. So it was not a SSE security definition.
Thank you.
Well,
with respect to the encryption, not
yes.
The searching
post. Right. Okay, so then people try to, you know, take the searching part into account. And before I do that, so this, let me talk about these algorithms that this type of scheme is going to be using. Okay, it's going to be an algorithm to generate a symmetric key. There's going to be a built index verb that would take, you know, the key and generate this data structure, okay, which is called I. For each word that, you know, you would like to search, there's going to be a trapdoor algorithm to generate a trapdoor for that keyword. And then there is a search verb that would take the index and the trapdoor and output all the identifiers of the files that your documents that you're looking for. Okay? And of course it will send you all the files that you're looking for. Call those ID1 through IDM. So then how this SSE general system would work. Again, it would use this additional data structure called secure index, and this was introduced by Go. Again, we are symmetrically encrypting data. We're going to be associating trapdoors to the keywords, okay, to enable the server to search for those. Okay, so so the client would have these documents, the document collection, would generate the index. Two-step in one here would encrypt that index, would encrypt those documents, and send everything to the server. Okay, some sort of setup phase. Now the client is looking for a keyword. This encrypted thing is a trapdoor. Okay, sent to the server, and the server sends back the encrypted documents. Okay. So here's when Go came in and said, so this previous approach didn't say anything about the search. Let's try to make sure that this addition, when the server is manipulating this auxiliary data structure, you know, nothing is leaked. Okay, we can have some sort of SSE security definition. So intuitively, we say the server, the adversary, would have the documents, right, encrypt the documents, would not be able to figure out what documents he's searching from the index. Okay, so the index would be secure. And so he proposed this sort of semantic security type definition against called the chosen keyword attacks to make the index secure. And Pictorialis would go something like this. So this would be the adversary, you know, it would be a typical indistinguishability type thing where, you know, the adversary chooses files, he gets indexes back, you know, sends keywords, he gets the trapdoors back, right? He does this for a while. Then he says two documents, okay, and he gets back an index. So maybe there's some more repetition of this, you know, interaction here. And then he has to figure out to what document the index corresponds. Okay, so that would make an index, you know, sort of independent from the document. Okay, secure in that respect. So in some sense, one could say that whatever can be computed from the index, from the documents, okay, then, let me read that again. Any function of the documents will be computed from the, you know, encrypted documents on the index, because the index now would be secure, could be computed from the what the server would see, you know, going out. That would be the length of documents and the search outcomes. Okay? But one issue here is that this type of security definition doesn't say anything about the security of the keywords themselves, or the trapdoors themselves. Okay? So we just, you know, the documents were encrypted with a semantically, whatever, secure encryption scheme. The index is secure because you cannot relate the index to the documents. So that should be fine. Except that there's still this other element called the trapdoors, which there's nothing said about. And then one suggestion would be, okay, well, let's make the trapdoor secure themselves and then see if everything works. And it turns out that you can build something, you can build a secure trapdoor scheme, an index scheme that satisfies the definition, but when you put them together, you, for instance, get to know the keyword. Okay? And in fact, Go was aware of this and suggested that this type of construct could be used for other applications that would not require, you know, this type of called stringent type of security. But if you want to use it for secure searches, then this is what happens. Okay? So then people try to kind of miss them and say, well, this was this keyword issue. Anyway, this is my take on the evolution of these definitions, right? It's not clear that they knew that, you know, things were happening, but people were proposing this definition and so forth. But effectively what happens is that this definition takes into account the keywords also. Okay? And therefore, so this is color-coded, you know, blue, red, and green. Notice that I'm adding stuff to this legend here. And here I'm adding also the trapdoors. Okay, so the definition also takes care that the trapdoors, this combo, if you put all these things together, then the server should know only what comes out, which is, you know, the length of the documents, the number of documents, and so forth. And, well, it turns out that this definition also has some problems. In particular, that the thing goes through only if we're assuming unique queries. Remember that I said something about the search pattern, where you could try to figure out if the server is using for two same keywords or not. Okay, this only works for when the queries are separate, because different are distinct. And it has some other more subtle definitions as well. And furthermore, it turns out all these constructions, except for oblivious RAMs, okay, are only good for something that we call non-adaptive adversaries. What would that mean in this context? Basically, the non-adaptive adversary would be that it would make queries independently of the past queries. Okay, it's like making all the queries at once. Okay, and the adaptive case would be, okay, it would try to make queries depending on what the previous queries were. Pictorially, it's equivalent to all the queries being sent in one shot, all the trapdoors. And here you have things like that. You have the setup, you know, one trapdoor, the outcome of the search, and so forth. Okay? So let's move on to this. Yeah, so in fact, this is why I have the plural here, because what we did is just play around with these definitions, because the Go definition is more of an indistinguishability type definition. The general mismatcher is a simulation type definition, and we tried both, and in fact, we proved that they are equivalent. And I think I might have some simulator slide there, but. So let's talk about the easiest construction, which is the non-adaptive construction. And let me make this terminology a little bit more precise. We would call it history. So it's an interaction between the client and the server. Okay, it's history with the document that we're accessing and the keywords or trapdoors that were sent. Okay. So that's down there. The view is basically the adversary's view of what's going on. Okay, so it would include encrypted documents, index, and the trapdoors that went around, and the trace is what the server, you know, sees going out. Okay, this is what we would think as a minimal, the maximal information that we should let the server know. You know, the ID of the documents, the size of the documents, and the search pattern. Okay. So notice again that I'm adding stuff. So our SSE definition will say something same as before, whatever can be computed from documents and keywords, you know, having access to this stuff, you know, should be computable from the length of the document, the search outcomes, and the search patterns. Okay, and now just to give you some idea of what's going on, there's some simulator here that only has access to the what we call the trace. Okay, and you have to be more formal and define, you know, all these traces or lengths and so forth. But basically, this is saying the adversary just have this, right, knows the view, and the simulator just knows the trace. Okay, and it's able to produce a view that is indistinguishable from the servers. Okay, so that's a high level the SSE security definition. So let me tell you a little bit about how this first construction for the non-adapted case would work. So let's first think about how to build a secure index. So the server would have all these documents, would have a list of keywords that he would want to search for. And then he would build, work on an array, if you will, of linked lists. Okay, so this linked list is saying, well, Austin appears in document 3, document 6, document 10, and so forth. Okay, and same with the other keywords. Okay, and as a side note, this is one of the challenges of working in the symmetric key world. In the case of public key, you know, searchable encryption, you have all these, you know, algebraic structures that you can play with, you know, homomorphic properties and so forth. Here, you know, you don't have anything. In some sense, you have to build your data structures from, you know, with your own hands. So we're gonna have this construct, this array of linked lists, and I'm gonna be using a pseudorandom function, pseudorandom permutation later. But this is what we're going to be doing with the linked list, okay? Generate the key and encrypt that, you know, include that in the record. And we start from the back, okay? Generate the key for the next record and so forth. And notice again that everything is color-coded. Okay, so after these key generations, you are able to follow this chain, this list forward. Right, if you have access to this key, you have a pointer, you would decrypt this thing and so forth. You're also going to be having, besides this structure, something called a table, a lookup table, for which we're going to be using this pseudorandom function and permutation. And this would be how to address, it would be an indirect addressing type trick, where we would have the keyword that we'd be able to access this data structure. Okay, and basically here, M would be the size, the maximum size of the word, of a keyword, say a byte. Okay, M would be the total number, the maximum number of units, words, that a document collection may have. Okay, so that's why the pseudorandom function goes, it's a function of M. It's going to go down to try to search, you know, in the space of the size of the document collection. So in this case, you would get this entry in the lookup table, and then you would put a, you know, pointer to the first record in the linked list, and so forth. Okay. And now we have to, in some sense, bind the beginning of the data structure, which we will do as follows, same as before. Okay, and now we want to blind the last table lookup, which is where we use the encrypt, if you want, the keyword, okay, to blind the beginning. And if I were not PowerPoint challenge, then this would not happen. But forget the F, this should be a G now. Okay? So notice that what the user would have to keep is a couple of keys. Okay, this is think of G and F as F sub K for some K and so forth, right? So constant information. And this is what the whole thing would look like at the server. Okay? So this is we've just built what we call our secure index. Now we want to be able to search on this index. So the user wants to search for Baltimore. So first he computes the address in the lookup table of Baltimore, then the key that will be able to decrypt that record, send that to the server. With the address, he would figure out where in the lookup table the thing is, and with the key, decrypt, and so forth, and get back the two documents. Okay, so this is a basic construction. And one thing to notice immediately is that the work of the server is proportional to the documents that contain that particular keyword. Right? Okay, and we overlooked a few technical issues, such as all this is going to have to be scrambled, so the server doesn't know what it's doing, and, it's not going to be a linear thing that's going to be looking at, so forth. And the other, perhaps more subtle issue is that we have to be able to store this lookup table. We have an exponential size domain, and we have a, smaller number of entries, so we have to be able to do some efficient indirect addressing, and we do that with something called FKS dictionaries. Okay, which has a constant time lookup, and the size is proportional to the number of actual entries. So how does this perform? Well, the scheme only has one run of interaction, right? You just send the query after you do all the setup work and dump everything on the server. Then it's just as I said, the user keeps it a constant number of items. Okay, sends one query once he wants to search for a keyword. And so it's just one round. The server does all this work, and gets back. So it's one round. The total size is proportional to the actual, to the size of the document collection, right? You're just encrypting. You have some length preserving encryption, just storing the collection encrypted on the index, which is, order the size of the document collection. And as I mentioned, the work is proportional to the actual number of documents containing the keyword. Okay, any questions? So let me mention a little bit about what the adaptive thing would look like. So here we have to start talking about, we have to make these statements for any possible prefix of the interaction, right? That's why we talk about partial history, meaning that if you look at it for so many rounds, then that's what you would get. And same with partial view and partial trace. A little bit more technically, so one thing is that we have this thing here that this statement should hold for any length of these interactions, basically. Okay, and what's the technical? The construction, in fact, is similar to the first construction, but from a simulation point of view, here what the simulator is going to have to do is it's going to have to commit to some index. And then be able, as things are adapted, right? So as keywords and trapdoors keep coming up, he's going to be able to have to, fake trapdoors that he already committed to. So it's some sort of equivocation. And as I mentioned, people have not looked at this before. And we can do that with by some tricks, in particular, by just labeling each word with each occurrence of word in a document is treated as a unique word. they're not in the same document, but you know, if somewhere appears in one document, it's, you know, level one. If there's a second document, it's level two, and so forth. Then this allows us at the high level to be able to prepare the simulator to prepare to be able to fake these trapdoors. And the total storage goes up, but the size of trapdoor, you know, it's a blow up, is constant, same as size of the index, and the server search time is also proportional to the actual number of documents that contain the keyword. Okay, so much about the adaptive thing. It's more challenging because for the proof, you have to be able to equip the simulator with more tricks. So let me mention at least one extension, and that is this SSC setting was the user itself, you know, wants to store data and then get it back himself, right? So there's something I would call multi-user SSE, where the owner of data would, you know, store the data and then would allow other users to search for the data. Okay, and we have these security notions for this setting. Now you have to think about things like revocation, and it has to be robust against user collusions, you know, so that they don't retrieve data if they are revoked and so forth. Another issue could be is anonymity, where the server, you might not want the server to know now who's looking for the data. And we have a simple construction that is basically is based on broadcast encryption. Okay, so transforms single user SSE plus broadcast encryption into a multi-user SSE scheme. Okay, I guess I just want to mention that extension. Open questions would be, so come up with a constant round scheme that hides everything. Okay, the last thing is relaxation of security definitions that we have. And another interesting question is, now search for Boolean combination of words. Turns out that conjunctive searchable encryption is relatively easy to do, and people have been doing that. We started with Goyle, Staron, and Waters, a more recent work by Bonet and Waters. Okay, but what is seems to be open is the case of disjunctive searches. Here you mean you want to work for, you would ask the server, give me all the documents that contain either this word or this word. And you have to satisfy this type of security definition that we have. Okay, so this appeared in CCS last month, and there's a fuller version in the ePrint archive.